What's up, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Scouting the League. Even with some technical issues and a late release on Apple Podcasts last week, we set our single day listenership record, and for that, we thank you. Neil and I, mostly Neil, hit on all things scouting and front office changes, a topic that we will keep you up to date on as staffs across the country continue to reset, reshape, and get more final as we get through the summer months. Now that we have our new PR, though, it's time to set a new one and keep on climbing. Last week's episode, a segment was dedicated to the conversation around growing analytics impact on scouting staffs and how that has affected overall numbers. The analytics area is still growing, evolving, and changing. Certainly needed its own episode. So here we are today. We brought in analytics expert Matt Manacharian to discuss all things analytics. So buckle up, or maybe better yet, get ready to nerd out maybe just a little bit on some analytics talk. Be some fun conversation today. Before we get into it, let me remind you, like, subscribe, and share this podcast wherever you are listening. We are out there on almost every platform: Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio. So wherever you are listening, do us a favor, hit that 5 stars, follow us, you know the drill. Leave us some comments. Always love to hear from you, interact, and let us know what you think. Today, as always, he was last week's expert. We'll get to him in just a second. Neil Stratton of Inside the League. I am former NFL scout Roderick David, now consulting in all things football. You can find Neil, like I said, at Inside the League on Twitter. I am at RightStepADV. Before we introduce and get into it with Matt and talk analytics, Neil, we have seen a number of moves kind of across the spectrum in scouting staffs across the country. Why don't you get us caught up on all things that happened?
Yeah, the first week was really busy. The second week was busy, and we're off to a really fast start on the third week as well. I'm just going to kind of go through some of the front offices that I think have really improved themselves, especially over the last 72 hours. And before we get started, this disclaimer: I'm not going to be able to name names in a lot of cases. We're taping this on Tuesday. By the time it's played, I think everyone that follows me on Inside the League on Twitter at least will know all these names, but right now I've got to hold off because I've been sworn to secrecy by a lot of people. At any rate, Detroit has added, or is getting ready to add, and to make an addition at the executive level that I think is going to be really impressive. You know, if you recall, Lance Newmark went to Washington to be one of the key figures in Adam Peters' new front office. They've got someone coming in who won't take his spot per se, but will handle some of his duties, I think. I don't know exactly what the division of responsibilities is going to be. They're also adding a scout at the area level who's really impressive, and I think it's going to really help them cover the country. Excuse me. The Chargers are making an addition at the executive level as well. And here's a hint: Baltimore roots. Joe Ortiz obviously came from the Ravens, one of the marquee scouting and front office staffs in the league. He's got someone coming in that he knows well that's going to be a key addition for him. Tennessee, I'm just going to say it. I got a lot of bad vibes across the industry about kind of where Tennessee's front office was, but credit to Rand Carthon. He's done tremendous work and made some key additions. It looks like there may be two at the executive level and one maybe kind of at the national level. I'm not sure exactly what titles all these people are going to be holding, but they're impressive additions and people that are well regarded across the league. So blue skies ahead for the Titans, no pun intended. And then Washington, of course, added Jack Quagliarello. I'm not sure if I pronounced that just right, but Jack is a guy. He's just a pro scout, okay? Came across from the Niners, was a scouting assistant there, but really bright future, part of the Northwestern football family, which is really one of the deepest wells of scouting, I guess, where teams go to find scouts. And he's kind of got that on his resume. He's got a lot of stints across the NFL, and he's going to come in as a pro guy. And I think the future's bright for Jack. But also Washington may be bringing in, and I'm 50-50 on this, but I know that they're scouting hard another member of a key of a highly respected front office in the league, and could be coming in to join Adam Peters as well. I mean, he's really building an all-star staff there. If you recall, again, Lance Newmark came from the Lions. He made a few other additions. There's another one, another marquee one that's coming, a pass winner of the Bart list. So those are all, I think, teams that are really making moves that are going to stack up well for him. Hot spots we're watching. Wasn't expecting the Texans to make as many moves as they have. They've done a lot. They've made a lot of moves, especially in their pro department. I expect them to start stocking up with new additions this week. Not sure exactly if this means Chris Blanco, who came in last year from the Vikings after a previous stint in Houston, is going to have expanded duties. I'm not sure if they're going to shuffle the deck in other ways. I think it'll be kind of a combination of in-house moves and maybe the odd hire. Obviously, Elliott Wolf in New England is reshaping his front office staff. He's made a few moves this week as well. Everyone follows me on Twitter has seen that. I know that they're interviewing. I know that they're probably getting close to a couple hires there. I'm not privy yet to what's going to happen there, but I've made no secret in the past that I'm a big fan of Elliott Wolf and Alonzo Highsmith. So again, the team is in capable hands. The Falcons also making some moves. We'll talk about that in just a second. One especially impressive, but right now I think they are really working on their pro department and kind of what they're trying to do there as well. The Browns, I think, are more shaping their scouting staff on the college side. Not sure exactly which direction they're going, but I know that some things are coming. We've talked to, I think, in the past about that they were talking to Josh Lucas, previously of the Bears and the Saints, who may be coming on board there. And then at last, the Panthers. And I think the Panthers are a team we talked about pretty extensively last week. They cleared a lot of space, but haven't done a lot yet, quite yet, to fill it up. So still a lot of things going there. Those are the five teams that we expect movement on this week. Want to give a hearty congratulations to Tumbo Bonaconda, who's the new director in Atlanta. You mentioned last week, Roger, you're a fan of his. I am too. He's a past winner of a Bart List Award for his work in 2022. The sky's the limit for Tumbo. Very highly regarded, very professional, very thorough. And a good guy, too. Retirements, too. We saw two this week. Tom McConaughey, who is the national scout with the Jags, has been did a long stint with the Chargers, I think 3 decades in the game as a scout. And also, kind of fun fact, he also played in the USFL for 2 years and went to camp with the Saints once upon a time. And Jeff Morrow, who was a senior personnel executive for the Panthers, another guy that's highly regarded. These are both retirements. They weren't let go or anything like that. Just kind of riding off in the sunset, enjoying some time off and well-deserved, of course. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention the fact that we saw the passing of A.J. Smith, I believe, this weekend. You may have met A.J. somewhere along the line. I think you worked with his son, Kyle. I'm not sure if y'all overlapped in Atlanta or not. But his son, Kyle, is the assistant GM in Atlanta, another guy that is a former Bart List Award winner, highly regarded across the league. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. AJ was instrumental in building the Bills teams that went to so many Super Bowls, as well as the Chargers teams that were so good, in the early 90s. Our condolences go out to the Smith family, to their friends, and to their friends as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is a full slate. Again, all the hires, again, as they come through, make sure you check out Neil's Twitter. Again, that's probably going to be your best spot to get him in a timely manner, at Inside the League on Twitter. Again, super happy for Tumbo, guy that I worked with for all my years in Atlanta. Really excited for him to take that next step up. Very deserving. They got another national guy that I think should be getting a phone call here soon. Certainly deserving. Again, always good to see good guys that you've worked with, you know, getting that recognition. And so happy for Tumbo. And again, lots more to happen here in the next week, next couple weeks. So again, check out Neil's Twitter for that. So finally, let's get to this week's expert. Finally, bring in Matt Manicharian, a guy that has been a part of a couple franchises that really value, have really been on the front end of the use of analytics in both the Saints and the Browns. Again, now part of Sports Info Solutions, as well as being an adjunct professor at NYU. So Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Let's start with your background. Again, been to a couple spots. Again, now with Sports Info Solutions. What's your background? Where did you come from? How did you get into analytics, and what do you do now?
Yeah, I mean, I would never categorize myself as like getting into analytics. I think of myself as a football guy. So like, always knew I wanted to work in football growing up. First job I had out of college was coaching high school football. Got an internship with the Saints and was there with, you know, Mickey Loomis, Sean Payton, Terry Fondeau, Ryan Pace, that whole crew, for the first few years of my career. Then went to Cleveland with Mike Lombardi. But then I went back to school to study some, I guess that's part of the nerd stuff, the sports analytics as it was evolving in baseball, soccer, and basketball, because it really wasn't a thing, very much at least discussed in football at the time. So went to learn about it with the general idea of trying to combine the best of both worlds. Basically, the way I think about it is, you can't really scout without understanding some of the advanced stats, and you can't understand football with just advanced stats. So I still think of myself as a football guy at SIS, where we do a lot of the analytics stuff. I'm generally a translator is how I consider myself, kind of in between the jocks and the nerds, making sure everybody's speaking the same language. But yeah, at the end of the day, I find myself in a different seat than I ever would have expected, going back, you know, 10, 15 years of my career.
Yeah. Now we have a lot of people that come on that listen in and they're trying to break in. Can you tell us how you got that internship with the Saints? I know you, it probably seems like it was a snap, but I mean, were there key persons maybe that championed you? Did you have an in there? Did you just get lucky more or less? I mean, send in your application. You're the one they chose.
It definitely didn't seem like a snap. So, I did a few things that I think helped me sort of make my own luck. And then I think I got lucky. And if I'm giving people advice, that's the advice I always give is you miss every shot you don't take. You got to keep knocking on the door and eventually the door's going to come down. I don't know if it's going to be in 1 week, in 1 year, or in 10 years, but if this is what you want to do and you're sure about that, which, you know, buyer beware, but if that's what you want to do, I would say that you got to keep pursuing it. So my story was, I graduated, started coaching high school football, you know, while I had my day job, because I knew I wanted to do that. I also wrote a blog, right? This is 2008. So I had a blog that I started that it wasn't like, you know, blogs now are like social media. That wasn't even really a thing. It wasn't to try to get a big following or anything like that. It was a place for me to create a portfolio of my football thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote every week and I was disciplined about it. And I created a work product. And now all of a sudden, after a year out of college, on my resume, I've coached the DBs and wide receivers of a high school football team. And I've created something that I can link to on my resume that's a living, breathing portfolio of all my football thoughts. And then I was sending resumes everywhere. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I would get the thick printer paper, the resume paper. I would have a resume, a cover letter. I would have references. I would have sample scouting reports. I learned how to write scouting reports, right? They always say, do the job that you want. I learned how to write scouting reports and I started creating, they weren't very good, but they were something. And there was a work product there again. So yeah, I created that product. I think that's helped me make my own luck. But then honestly, it was, the power of loose ties, as Malcolm Gladwell would say, it was a friend of a friend of a friend of my dad's connected me to somebody who was somehow connected to Mickey Loomis and got my resume in front of him. And he said, sure, you can come in for a 6 week internship. And that's how I got my foot in the door, did a 6 week summer internship and spent every waking moment I could either doing a task or in the scouting room, just peeling the magnets, getting to know what was going on, trying to be a sponge and do whatever was asked of me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't stick that year. I went back. I coached another year of high school football. I was like a real estate agent in New York doing that for my day job. But I got back in for that summer internship again the second year. And I told Mickey, you know, that time I wasn't leaving. And he kind of laughed at me at first. But sure enough, 2 months later, I found a way to he actually came to my desk and he said, I got good news and bad news. Is the bad news, you got to move out of the hotel. The good news is you can stay here for good.
That must have been a pretty awesome feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, always a lot of anxiety when the GM's walking up to your little intern desk.
No question about that. It, usually the answer is, hey, what do you need, boss? What do you need? That's perfect. A couple things that you, again, that you hit on there that I love. Again, it's about creating a situation where you can get lucky in you know, a certain sense. Again, doing all the work so when the cards are lined up, you're ready to, you know, follow through. And again, that is something, again, it's not just luck, but it's also not just hard work. It's got to mesh. But again, both elements have to be there. And again, you said you're a football guy, which is, again, there are analytics and data people, and then there are football people. And again, as we continue to evolve, again, having that marriage between the two is so important. Again, analytics is still fairly new in the game of football. It is, again, you can watch baseball movies where it is in depth, but again, in football, it's still kind of a work in progress. So I want to start with this question. If someone asks you, what is analytics specifically in the football sense, what kind of answer are you giving them?
I would say it's a scary word, and most football people prefer the term tendencies.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing tendencies, you know, since we were born, right? We've been looking at tendencies. We've been trying to figure out, you know, what the old wing T, what it was going to be. Was it going to be waggle, or was it going to be buck sweep, all that kind of stuff. So, in one sense, if you're afraid of the word analytics, it's tendencies. Right. But analytics kind of soups it up a little bit. But in general, all analytics really are is using numbers to help you make decisions. So I love to think of it that way. I love to think of analytics as a framework that I can compare my gut against, right? A good example would be injuries. We used to always talk about injuries when I was a scout, and we'd say, if they haven't been injured, they're not likely to get injured. If they've been injured, they're likely to get injured again. Well, it turns out the math agrees with that. People that have been injured before are more likely to get injured again, even different body parts and things like that. But analytics can tell you, well, based on the history of running backs with this sort of injury, he's got a 30% chance of returning within the next 4 weeks. Now, all of a sudden, instead of saying, oh, he's likely, he's not likely, it's an actual data point that you can work with. Doesn't mean it's going to be right 100% of the time. It doesn't mean you have to follow it like it's the gospel. I remember a couple of years ago, I was talking to the Washington football team, telling them, hey, our modeling is coming up, and it's saying that Chase Young's at a really high injury risk. And they said, so what? You want me to take my best player off the field? Like, not happening. And that's fine too, right? Like, so all this is a framework that if you put it into some sort of mathematical or even just logical oriented system, then you can take a step back and evaluate it from that level. So that's how I like to think of it. But again, I go back tendencies, just the same way you wouldn't say, oh, well, this team, when they go 3-by-1, they run a flag concept 80% of the time. So then let's just guard that and nothing else. No, that's not what analytics says. It says 80%. It says that means 1 out of 5 times something else is happening, right? It's like the old Trident commercial. I don't know, I hope that's a good explanation, because I know this is a football podcast.
Yeah.
And I hate the conversation when it comes out and it's like football against analytics, because that's so pointless. It's such a useless conversation. Let's try to learn from each other and find something that neither of us would have discovered on our own. That's where I think the value is.
Matt, it fascinates me that you can get that granular on a single player. And obviously Chase Young has proven to be quite injury prone. And as a Saints fan, that really concerns me. But with that said, you know, what recommendation would you make to a team like Washington or to a team like New Orleans, given that he has had that tendency? Is there a way to manage that, or is it just simply, hey, manage it, figure out a way? I mean, do the numbers tell you, hey, this is how many reps he can take in a game, how many snaps? Do the numbers tell you how many games he's probably going to play this year? I mean, can you really get that definitive with it?
Yeah, so this is a cool little. Now we're going to get into the nerd stuff, Neil. When you talk about analytics, right, you can talk about descriptive. What happened, right? In football, often that's he had an 8-yard game, right? Then you can get into the predictive. What's going to happen, right? That's what all the fantasy guys care about, right? Who's going to win, all the sports betting, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Now, what you're asking for is prescriptive. What can I do about it? How do I use that information? How can I activate that? And that's kind of the next frontier for football where we're approaching that. I think if you look at baseball and the way they're doing pitch design, right? They're evaluating how fast you're throwing, the exact spin axis. And they're telling you, oh, if you rotate it 1/16th of a rotation, you're going to throw it. You know, that's prescriptive. That's actually saying here's what you can do. In the case of injury prevention, it's difficult, right? The error bars are wide. Predicting injuries is a hard thing. That said, the most basic thing you can do, which, you know, frustrates every NBA fan, is a little bit of minutes restrictions. It's a snap count. It's the old put them on a pitch count. Same way, you know, Sean Payton, when I was there, he wasn't going to run Darren Sproles behind the tackles 25 times because he understood that that was a good way to break him down.
Right.
So you use a pitch count is the best thing you can do. So you're actually saying, all right, let's make sure Chase Young's on the field for our third down snaps. Let's make sure certain situations we're able to get him out there and that we're giving him a blow if it's a series that goes more than five plays, X, Y, and Z, whatever it might be. That's kind of the first layer of it. Beyond that, teams are getting pretty advanced right now in terms of their sports science staffs and a lot of the stuff that when you bring in the analytics along with the strength staff, along with the medical team, you can really start to try to solve for these things on a more holistic level, right? Mm-hmm. For each individual player, what are their specific risk points? How can we manage those, whether it's wearing the devices during practice that you can track or whether it's specific, some of the force plates and stuff like that they have in the weight room using computer vision and stuff like that. It's pretty powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. So get in the lab, basically, and because that's where it's going, right? Everything I've learned in the last 10 years is what's happened in baseball, that's where we're going. Now, that doesn't mean like the sport's going to become a math sport, right? It's chess on grass. The on grass part's important. These are people here. But there is a lot of, I think, development that can come once you start to get into that prescriptive realm like you're talking about.
Yeah.
Matt, give me three teams that are doing it right in the NFL right now.
That's a funny question. Three teams that are doing it right in the NFL right now. Baltimore's an easy one. Baltimore certainly has a well-built-out staff for years, and they do a great job of integrating their analytics within their full organization, right? So like I was saying before, you can't have just analytics or scouting. They take their analysts, and they actually make sure that they're doing some advanced reports, that they're doing some of the scouting stuff so that they really learn the subject matter in the way that you need to. So I think they're one team certainly doing a great job with it. Another team that comes to mind a little bit more off the radar is probably Houston. Houston's been a little bit quiet, a little bit behind the scenes about how they've been building up. But from a tech standpoint, they're doing things that are ahead of where a lot of the league is. Mm-hmm. And then I throw San Francisco in the mix as well. They're doing a lot of different things, but obviously they've had a lot of success. I don't think it's a surprise when you look at how they've been able to keep picking up draft picks as members of their coaching staff and front office get picked up by other teams. And mm-hmm. that's just, you know, it's like the rich get richer with them. So, and then, you know, you look around the league, but I don't want to limit it there because you have Minnesota who does a great job. You have Dallas who totally refurbished their department last year. Mm-hmm. You have the Eagles who, you know, have the original. So there's a lot of teams that are really figuring out advantages. There's no teams like the Yankees or like the Tampa Bay Rays that have a 40-person staff, and like the Rays are that far ahead of people that they can compete even though they don't have the salaries. There's nobody like that in the NFL, I wouldn't say. But I think it's going to be interesting to see the way that it progresses.
Okay.
Yeah, you get – again, there's a – man – Every comment or every time you start going here, again, I got about three or four notes that I love. Again, the tendencies conversation is fancy. Again, I go back to my pro scouting days. And like you said, that hunch, you're watching as a pro scout, you're watching snap after snap, game after game. And again, the analytics thing it changed the game as a pro scout, where all of a sudden it's like, man, it really seems like this is happening again. I had a great relationship with the analytics department. Hey, can you look at all this situation? And again, now it's easier. It's at the fingertips of every scout out there to dig into that stuff. And it's like, man, yeah, 75%. Again, like you said in your 3x1 example, 80% we're getting this. Again, that is, those are those nuggets that the coaches love. Again, from a film access standpoint, to be able to dig into the granular, hey, I want to see, again, every time, again, this wide receiver, he's fantastic. But again, is he really clutch? Is he good on third down? Well, let's look at every third down when it was a must situation. And then again, you start talking about your buckets that you drop players into. And that's what we used to talk about it in buckets in Atlanta, where, again, there's no, from a prescription standpoint, there's no, you know, end all be all, but it's going to, hey, if Chase Young plays X amount of snaps, it's this percentage likely that he's going to be injured. Again, right, no guarantee. You go back and think about guys like Miles Jack and Jalen Smith coming out in the draft. For both those guys, it wasn't a question of if a knee was going to go out. It was more about when. And again, both guys beat the odds in a lot of the, you know, metrics that came out on them. Because again, you're talking rare human beings, rare athletes that have rare healing power. But again, it becomes, hey, it's not maybe if it goes out, but when. So again, from all that stuff, man, it's just fascinating how you can match it up, how you can help it make decisions. For the fans out there, for what we see on the front of really telecasts, what we see in game, the coaching side of analytics has gotten probably more headway. Again, fourth down conversions up, onside kick percentages, end of half and game scenarios. Why has it been easier to nail down the coaching and maybe the in-game decision side as opposed to that personnel and scouting side?
You know, I'm not sure that the way that it's really worked within the organizations has completely matched kind of that perception. I think that a lot of times, you know, the organizations have developed in different ways, whether it's on the front office, the injury prevention, the coaching side, the player acquisition, like there's all these kind of different use cases for it. And I think that it's all kind of dispersed in different ways in different organizations. Depends on who the people there are and that sort of thing. The coaching side is on TV. Everybody can see it every week, right? Everybody can see, oh, they're going for it on fourth down. They never would have gone for it on fourth down here 10 years ago or whatever you want to, you know, something like that. So I think the fourth down one is like, some people think about analytics and they think that fourth downs are analytics. Like that's what, like when they answered the first question, what is analytics? They would have said fourth downs. No punting, right? But there's more to it than that, clearly. So I think that's an obvious place where you could find the game, where you could have people just look at the percentages and say, hey, wait a minute, people are being conservative in ways that don't really make sense in terms of if they're trying to maximize their chances of winning. And so that's something that took hold pretty quickly there. But you guys know as well as I do, if you're coaching a football game, just going for it on fourth down isn't going to make the difference between winning and losing, right? You got to block and tackle better than the other team. You've got to win the football game. So it's around the margins in that sense. To me, the really impactful places are, look at draft strategy, right? It used to be the Jimmy Johnson chart. Now everybody wants to trade down based on those numbers, and they have their new updated charts that, you know, are getting morphed around every year. So all of a sudden now it's, okay, because of that, we're going to value some of those middle and late picks a little bit more than these high picks, and the league has adjusted in that sense. So maybe we don't talk about it as much as fourth downs because it only happens once a year, but I think that's as much of the process. How about, you know, when you're trying to figure out your exact regions, what schools each of your scouts need to cover? If you've got more prospects coming in a certain area and less in another area, and you use that to rearrange your plans during the summer before you even start training camp, I would recommend you're letting your analytics folk help sort that stuff out and not just trying to, you know, back of the envelope it yourself. Not that you have to listen to everything they say, but let them create the model and then you add the human element to it. So I think that it has penetrated a lot more than just the fourth down, but it's right there in front of you, you know. So, and you know, heck, people want to scream about it on Twitter all day long, which doesn't help.
There you go. That's, you know, gives people something to, you know, poke at. And that's, you know, the Dan Campbell is obviously the easy one that everybody thinks of. Again, how aggressive he got. But again, with Dan Campbell, that's everything the Detroit Lions are doing now. It is not an isolated analytics decision or an isolated gut decision. Again, analytics, scouting, tendencies, again, all puzzle pieces that everybody's putting together to make the best decision when that time comes. Again, and again, you get your percentages, you get your odds, but again, all that can, you know, factor in. So again, it's all matters. So on the scouting side, again, you hit on something that I definitely believe in. Again, using your analytics or using some of your metrics to determine either scout areas and sliding them around a little bit, not being so set in, hey, this is your state regardless of what happens. Where else do you think analytics and data is really playing a factor, really, in the scouting and player evaluation process?
That's an interesting one because, you know, I think, again, a lot of people think about that and they think of like PFF grades and that sort of thing. And sometimes I think that does, like, it oversimplifies it and does a bit of a disservice. Anytime you're looking at something that's just one number, and I'm not picking on them, we do this too with, you know, different things, but anytime you just have one number, it's going to be hard to kind of gather everything that goes into a football player inside that one number. So, when you can evaluate things just a little bit more in terms of, all right, we're looking at a pass rusher here. I don't want you to give me your top 10 list of pass rushers based on the numbers. I want to start to understand how often they're creating pressures, how often they're creating sacks, what alignment they're usually playing out of. I want to see, right, like, we want to draft a guy that's going to fit into our defensive scheme and not somebody that's going to be a fish out of water. You look at, you know, I think we've come a long way from the combine measurables kind of being like the best numbers that we had to look at players. And now there's some better numbers out there. There's how fast you play on the field, different efficiencies and things like that. So I think we're still scratching the surface on that in a lot of ways. But certainly when you can quantify all the different aspects of things, including scout grades, that's kind of like secretly the best weapon that you have, right? So scouts collect data. It's actually what they do, mm-hmm. right? You're out on the road, and whether it's watching the film, watching practice, getting the character reports from the coaches, the academic advisors, those are all data points. And when you grade a player, right, when you say he's got six hands or he's got seven athletic ability, whatever your scale is, those are all data points that, in my experience, we are pretty bad on the scouting side at understanding how to use those all together, right? We would give our different grades, and then the scouting director would say, okay, this guy's a 6.42 based on me hearing the discussion and being, you know, god of the room. But in actuality, like, there are better ways that you can do that. You can start to adjust for the scout that tends to grade a little bit higher at a certain position. You can start to say, hey, historically, when we are scouting edge rushers, we nail them 80% of the time. But when we're looking at corners, our hit rate's only 55%. So we can be a little bit more confident about our ability to take this pick. And then, you know, then you can take it to a different level where you're crafting your whole strategy around what you do well and what you don't do well, right? Go back to Dan Campbell. Well, he's got that mammoth offensive line. That's not an accident. They built that offensive line because they said, hey, if we're going to have Jared Goff at quarterback, this dude can't play under pressure. So we better be a ground and pound, beat you up, play action, put him in situations to get the ball in his playmaker's hands, and we'll get the best Jared Goff. And I mean, it may be too good the amount they had to pay him. But but that's where you're building. That's where the Eagles with Jalen Hurts and Jason Kelce, and knowing that they have that secret weapon that they can always get the fourth and one, fourth and two. Man, you can build your whole strategy differently around that. So that's where I think you really start transcending beyond, you know, oh, he's got 32-inch arms, he can't play for us. Like, that stuff has seen its day.
Yeah. The abundance of data is one of the things, again, to your point, that has continued to evolve. And also one of the reasons that anybody that's pounding the table for a change in the combine. Oh, we don't need all this data anymore. We pro days need to change, whatever. No, there's a historical precedent. Again, the more data, the further back you go, and obviously moving forward, the more data you have, again, is going to allow teams to either use it correctly or use it incorrectly, use it in a way that, again, they can dig in, they can be better with their evaluation process. Again, the better a team can be with their data as part of their scouting reports, I would argue the better situation every player is going to be put in to maximize their ability and be a good player. So again, hopefully for the organization, for the player, for the coach, for the scout, it all comes together in a way that's going to allow everybody the maximum amount of success, which again, most scouts want every player they evaluate to have success. Again, whether they're on their team or another team, they want to see their evaluation be right. And so it all goes into it together. Again, you hit on a couple pass rushers. Again, quarterbacks, you maybe have more analytic data just because the number of stats you have. Are there certain positions that analytics have been either more accurate or more helpful in evaluating, and maybe what sets those positions apart?
Yeah, I think the positions where you have more data points that are readily available, it's done a little bit better there. So that is like sort of your quarterbacks, your receivers. I think as far as coming out of college, we're at a pretty good point right now, especially on the receiver front. But that's also coincided with, you know, the rise of 7-on-7s and things like that. These kids just grow up doing it. In terms of predictiveness, definitely, we feel like we have a much better ability to predict pass rushers than we do defensive backs, for example. Defensive back tends to be very volatile in terms of its performance, whereas you generally, not the sack numbers, but basically the different pressure aspects of defensive line play, those tend to project out a little bit more. And then we did a really fun project this year at SIS. We started actually a whole new data collection based on what we call scouting data. And basically what we've done there for offensive linemen, we took top 10 offensive linemen in the draft. We looked at every snap of theirs over the last 2 years. This is one of my favorite things about analytics. You can watch every snap. Very hard to do that as a scout for every player. Analytics, they can see everything, not with the granularity of your eyes, but you can gather stuff. And so for each of these plays, we recorded every attempted block that they made. So not just, you know, where was he aligned and what was his stance, that stuff like that, but who was he blocking? Was he comboing with somebody? If so, who was there multiple block attempts on the play? We'll look at those all. What type of block was it? Was it a down block? Was it a pull? Was it a vertical set? Was it a wide set? All this kind of granularity, looking at what actually the player was being asked to do on the play. And then on pass plays, what pass rush move was the defender using, right? Was it a swim? Was it a spin? That sort of granularity. And then finally, the result of the play, you know, not just win, loss, tie, but actually looking at this guy won because he showed great anchor strength on this play. This guy lost because he showed poor balance. Whatever the answer is on there, we're tagging all this stuff. And it allowed us to create sort of not only a new suite of metrics around the different offensive linemen in the draft this year, looking at how they performed in various situations. Like I said, not just one number. Yeah, this guy's the best, this guy's the worst. But understanding what schemes they performed well in, how they've developed over the course of the last 2 years. How was their trajectory? Were they getting better? What was being asked of them? And you got a really interesting data set. Take somebody like Graham Barton, for example. We saw a player there that was as powerful as they come, absolute mauler in a lot of ways is where the data showed out, but not somebody who you felt very comfortable with pass protecting at tackle. And I said, wow, that's a pretty stark report that they gave here. I threw on a couple of games of film. It happened that my perception in those two games matched what the analytics were. That you guys know, it doesn't always happen that way. But I thought this was really cool because instead of looking at stats, right, which is a lot of times what people think about when analytics, In this case, we were trying to distill the process of evaluating an offensive lineman down into its smaller components and then create different metrics and cutups based on that. Because that's the other cool thing you can do. You can just flip it on and say, all right, I want to see every time this guy quick set and pass protection. And boom, you've got your cut up and you can see, okay, we can work with this. This is no good. So whether you're on the coaching side or whether you're looking at it as a high level analyst, I think there's a lot of value to that sort of thing. So hopefully that's a good example.
Matt, when you spoke at my seminar in 2018, this part fascinates me because it was 17. We had lunch beforehand.
We're old, huh?
Man, we're real old. We had lunch beforehand. We talked about the offensive line grading. And I think even then you were kind of like, we don't really have that model yet, but it sounds like you've really refined it a lot. But my question is, how do you grade like zone blocking, which isn't nearly as man on man isolated, that kind of stuff? I mean, is that still kind of a weakness of analytics or is that something y'all refined as well?
Yeah, I don't think so at all. So in those situations, when we're looking at the zone blocking, we can define, like the different classifications within there, right? Sometimes you'll be comboing, sometimes you'll be more solo. There'll be different things going on. But by looking at that and by looking at not just the success rate of the plays as they were run behind you, but by looking at how well you executed those blocks, we can compare you to average, what we would find. So assuming you actually have some zone blocking reps, right? There'll be some schools that'll be pure gap almost. But assuming you have some of those reps, we can get that eval. And if nothing else, we can show you the cut up of those reps so that you can come to a decision on your own. So I think that, listen, there are still a lot of blind spots. We're a long way from figuring this sport out. I don't think we ever will. I don't think that would be very fun anyway. But I do think that there's a lot of information to be gained there where at this point, I'd be comfortable saying to a coach, this is the relevant cut up for you on this player. And, this is the way you should be checking out. This is what the grades had to say about him. Don't let that cloud your judgment. If it matches, great. If not, we'll dig in and try to figure out how to get better next time.
Matt, I don't think I'd be doing my job if I didn't ask this question. This is a scouting podcast, and we're seeing front offices mushroom at the executive level, sometimes at the expense of the guys who are on the road. Can we, based on the amount of data that's being gathered now and obviously the amount of film, will we see a day when we don't send guys out in August and have them come back in November? I mean, could this really be done? Divorced of the character support, let's take that off the table. Strictly the playing, the evaluation, the metrics. Could we see a day when teams don't send scouts on the road anymore?
I think that would be very stupid. Respectfully, I think that would be a really dumb thing to do. So
you don't have to be respectful with that one. It would be stupid. We can just go with that. Forget the respectful part of it. Sorry, Matt, keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rams are being very revolutionary in what they're doing. They're not sending nearly as many scouts on the road during the All-Star games. They're not sending them to the combine. More and more scouts are not in Indianapolis, which is amazing. Anyone who's been to the Senior Bowl, I'm sorry. And if they go now and if they went 10 years ago, it is a drastic difference in the amount of people that are there. And I think, again, if you look at the way NFL scouting staffs are being formed, you're seeing a lot more decision makers and a lot more Chiefs and fewer Indians. And it is my fear that they're going to start using analytics to justify more and more of that. That's my feeling.
So I want to be clear, Neil. I don't think you're stupid because this happened in baseball. In baseball. No. I got it. Like, in baseball, there was the sort of like first analytics revolution, and a few teams did do this. They reduced the number of scouts and tried to replace it with analytics. They tried to take their budget that used to be over here, and they robbed Peter to pay Paul. Mm-hmm. That didn't work. That was a horrible, horrible failure, and all the teams have swung way back over from it. And now, yes, you have teams with 40-person analytics staffs, but the drastic reduction in the number of scouts that you have on the road it just hasn't played out in that respect. You find little examples here and there, but generally speaking, there are, I mean, I was at the Yankee game the other day. There were 20 scouts there with, you know, their old school equipment, all that kind of stuff, doing their thing, getting you good old eye testing. So I think that there are definitely different ways that you can do things. There are things that you can do more efficiently than what you would have done in the past. But like any technology, this is like when people ask me about AI, are you worried about the AI taking your job? I'm like, nah, man, back in the day, they were worried when the printing press came out. They had so many people with jobs because they used to write the whole book out. That took a lot of time. Those people all lost their jobs, but we're doing okay. So, you know, that oversimplifies things a bit. But where do I think it's going? I think that people will learn that the complement between great scouts and great analysts, and having scouts that have to understand analytics and having analysts that have to really understand football, all that stuff growing together, that to me is where we're headed. Not we're going to use this as a great cost-cutting mechanism. This is the NFL. They don't need to cut costs in that sort of way. They need to win Super Bowls. That's how you make your organization valuable. So, I've been following you, Neil, and following the patterns. I feel like it was New England that was doing this a little while ago, where it was very much like our scouts are information gatherers. Oh, yeah. And we almost like commoditize it. And then, you know, us big brain people, we make the decisions. Mm-hmm. I think that you might find some of that, but I don't think that has to do as much with the analytics as it does with just the way organizational structures are changing. And I think it's kind of bigger than that in a way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if only we could convince a few of these owners to, you know, spend money in their personnel and scouting departments the way they do just about everywhere else. You know, because there's definitely money to go around. Matt, you hit on, again, in the baseball sense, that old school, again, getting eyes on, doing the eye test. Again, as you've come up through analytics, especially in the early maybe phases, there was definitely, I have to imagine there was some old school, no, keep the numbers. All I care is about the film. All I care about is my report. Obviously, we're getting through that some. Again, younger scouts, maybe older scouts getting more used to analytics. Did you ever see a rift or a divide in scouting departments as you start marrying the, you know, eye test evaluation with that analytic and analytics and data? And how did you see that addressed?
Yeah, you know, I did see that. And I would say that the rifts that come up when it's analytics versus scouting in some places that I've seen are very similar to the rifts when it's coaches against scouts, maybe disagreeing about a player, or the medical staff disagreeing with the research that you've done about somebody taking somebody you wanted off your board. To me, all of these examples of when you don't have consensus in the draft room, and I don't mean consensus like groupthink, I mean getting on the same page and having the same vision about the player. Mm-hmm. I've seen those rifts pop up in so many different ways, and I think it's actually sort of like less common on the analytics side. Now, there might be more of like a, hey, we don't want to talk to those guys. We don't want to talk to the nerds. They're not us. That'll happen for sure. And there'll be analysts that think they're too smart. And, oh, these football guys, they don't understand what they don't understand. That definitely happens. But to me, it's almost, in my experience, more common that all of the ways that humans can disagree with one another find ways to come out. And it's not like a unique to analytics thing. On Twitter, it's different though.
No, Twitter is always there. That's the echo chamber that, again, don't get on and look to argue with anybody on there. That's pointless. Again, you can get on there and yell at us if you want to, you can find us all on there. But again, it's all part of the conversation, again, with every player and every decision. So Matt, here's the big one. What do you think the future of analytics in football is going to be?
That's a great question. I think that right now we are learning so much and the game's changing so fast that to try to make a prediction, like it's almost like it'll be something that you couldn't have imagined, right? It's like the Jetsons. one thing that I think could legitimately happen in this sport is that teams start to play multiple quarterbacks at the same time. I think you might, if you look at other sports, spacing, right? Spacing is a really key concept, whether it's in baseball, where you shifted the whole defense around and then they banned the shift, or whether it's basketball, where everybody's spreading out. Almost everybody plays four or five out now, with the center position completely changing. Spacing, I think that's where football is going. We've already seen the spread offense. Let's spread them out to run it, not just spread them out to throw it. That's one thing that's happened already. But I think if you start to try to imagine, and this is where I get to, like, it's so unpredictable. If you start try to imagine how the game can morph, there are no rules about throwing the ball multiple times on a play. There's just, you can't throw it forward multiple times on a play. So if anybody's watched rugby and doesn't think there are lessons that could be applied to football strategically and changing the geometry of the field, I think that you're being closed-minded. Because if somebody comes along and figures out a way to do this, then we're not going to be saying, you know, if you got two quarterbacks, you don't have one. We're going to start saying, like, you better have two quarterbacks. It could be a game that ends up looking a lot more like basketball on grass, in a certain sense. So really, I kind of jumped out ahead there. Like, where do I see things going? That's how, and that's not an analytics thing. That's how just this game could evolve. Mm-hmm. On a real simple level, the age old story of football, analytics or not, is defenses find a way to catch up to offenses, and then the rules change. Whether it's the invention of the forward pass, whether it's all the rules recently about protecting the quarterback, whether it's illegal contact 25 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever that was, these rules are all geared towards helping the offense, and then the defense catches up. So if I have one prediction of what I expect that pattern to continue going forward.
Yeah. I love that again.
The multiple quarterbacks thing, Matt, is something I've thought about a lot, and you're right. I mean, you only throw it forward once, but I mean, you can throw it backwards as many times as you want. And think how electric a hook and ladder play is when executed well, and how effective that is. You know, I think you're right on the money with that. I guess the only question is, will the NFLPA allow enough practice time across the board for teams to really do that? I think that probably that's the one thing limiting it, because that would require a lot of coordination and a lot of coaching and a lot of work to really make that manifest across the league. We'll see if that happens.
It's super frustrating, the lack of alignment, you know, with the union and with what's kind of in the best interest of the game. That's a whole different point, but you know, the players union, they're worried about player safety, practice time, all that kind of stuff. The NFL, they're worried about money, money, money. How do we get more games on the calendar? And unfortunately, I think the game ends up suffering a little bit, because as a stakeholder, the players and the owners are represented, but not the coaches, not the scouts, and not the game. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly. Yeah. Well, maybe two quarterbacks. Maybe the Falcons are just out in front of all of us here, drafting Mike Penix, you know, in the first round. Kirk Cousins, Mike Penix, both in the backfield. I'm going to go with probably not on that one. But again, we'll see where it all shakes out. This has been a fun, fantastic conversation. I love analytics. Again, I got to, as the Falcons analytics department grew while I was in Atlanta, I was lockstep with them. Great group. So many different things, so many different elements that you can bring to the table with it. Again, as you're building that puzzle, every prospect is a puzzle that you're putting together for a year, 2 years. And again, every piece of information, piece of data that you have to help you make that final right decision on them is fantastic. Matt, really appreciate you being on. I know you're on Twitter at Matt Mano, M-A-N-O. Again, where else can people find what you do? Again, your website, where can people go?
Yep, you can find SIS, or our website is sportsinfosolutions.com. It's interesting you mentioning the Falcons and their staff there. I've had the great pleasure of, you know, working with Terry Fondo back in the day. Now, obviously, he's there. And one of my old coworkers at SIS, Stephen Polacek, is a member of that analytics staff that within his organization there in Atlanta. So it's pretty cool. There's always a small world in this sport. That's the website. The company on Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS. You can check us out there. And then certainly if you're with a team or you're whether it's pro, college, or agencies, different people like that, we work with those as well. So you can reach out through the website if you're interested there.
Now, do you still have your podcast?
So I gave it up. So I did that about 6 years. We did Off the Charts Football Podcast for SIS. I have transferred over ownership over it to Bryce Rossler, my colleague at SIS. He's phenomenal, really smart, both researcher and student of the game, as much X's and O's as any scout I've ever come across. So he actually came from our operations side onto the research. So Bryce runs the podcast now. It's much better. It's a lot less me rambling and more interesting stuff. But yeah, you can check that out wherever you get podcasts too. It's the Off the Charts Football Podcast.
Perfect. That's perfect. Ton of good information. Again, just like we do with scouts, just like, again, our data and analytics guys, again, just dig for information and find out whatever you can. Before we go, let me remind you, if you are an agent, which again, I know there's a few of them out there, let me remind you to check out agentlive360.com, the number one software tool you need to manage your agency efficiently and effectively, invoicing, player profiles, data management, endorsements, so much more. Agent Live 360 is the CRM you need to be successful as an agent. Head on over to agentlive360.com, request a demo, sign up. If you want that demo, I'll hop on a Zoom call with you. We will talk through the entire software, and I can about guarantee you we will also talk some ball as well. That is agentlive360.com. We will be back next week with all things football. We've got a couple really good podcasts coming up. Again, get into some more CFL talk, some more speed and training talk. Again, we'll continue to keep you updated on all things scouting department staff. Again, make sure you check out Neil at Inside the League. I'm at Right Step ADV. Some would say this is a quiet time for football, the month of May, but certainly it's quieter than other times. Plenty to discuss either way as we head into the summer. We will be talking some specific teams, divisions, expectations, maybe even make some predictions from those that know their team best. You will definitely want to tune in to get a good lay of the land. So until next time, keep scouting.